Imagine knowing exactly what your students are learning and exactly which steps you need to take next.
Join us in Download the Reading Quiz to craft meaningful and productive formative assessments that move away from gotcha moments of basic recall and toward assessing what your students actually can do.
In this 30-minute free masterclass, we'll share three powerful assessment keys that work for any novel at any time of the year.
Head to shop.bravenewteaching.com/masterclass to sign up, and we'll also send you a free workbook to keep track of all your notes.
Once again, that's shop.bravenewteaching.com/masterclass to nail formative assessments forever.
Well, hello and welcome back to Brave New Teaching, and welcome to a lesson plan rescue. And Amanda, this is a doozy, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm still not sure I'm actually ready to... I feel like I can't rescue this teacher until I can hold her in my arms and tell her everything's going to be okay.
It's okay, little bird. So basically, the idea behind these lesson plan rescues is that we want to take issues, quandaries, questions, you know, just like dilemmas from you, our audience, our teaching colleagues out there in the world, and say, hey, here's the problem. Here's some different ways for us to solve it. Like, here's how we would do it. You know, with our lots of years combined of classroom teaching, I'm still in the trenches, and Amanda works every day with teachers who are also still in the classroom. Like, so very real veteran perspectives. Today's, we started talking before we started recording, which was good because the swear words that came out of my mouth would have changed our rating on the podcast apps, because this, Amanda, just read it.
It's fever inducing. It's rage inducing.
It's rage inducing, especially for me, like a hippie California teacher. And I know that this is an issue for people in basically every state, as well as we have international audience too. So like, I'm sure that this is an issue in different places. For some of you for whom this is not an issue, it is going to boil your blood. Because you're going to go, there's no way this is real. But it's so real. Ugh. Go, Amanda.
Yeah. And I told Marie that I've lived it, but I can't actually on air talk about the ways that we
No, we can't
it.
Talk about our initial reaction, because that's got, it's problematic in its own right.
DM, so we don't get arrested. So I asked, you know, what are some things you'd like for Less Pen Rescue? I got lots of great suggestions, but this one I think is really important to address quickly. This teacher wrote, reading in class. My school only has class sets of books. I want students to be engaged with the book. And so Marie and I kind of stared at each other. I said, Marie, this is real.
Because I was like, no way. Even though I know it's real, because I've had a similar, I mean, like, I've run into things like this with like low copies of books. And I teach in a rather large comprehensive high school. And I mean, this is something we've talked about a lot on the podcast and that I've talked about on my YouTube channel in different places, is like how to source physical copies of books. That's not necessarily what we're going to get into today, because I don't know that that's the answer. We'll talk a little bit about it, but like, we want to address this question in as productive a way as possible. And I think that's where we should start. Yeah, Amanda, is like the really productive, here's what you could do tomorrow answer, and then some creative answers, perfect world style answers. Well, because actually step one is I feel like parents should be going to the Board of Education.
Well, I was gonna say, before we even go to the music, let us make our stance known that this is absolutely criminal to put texts on a curriculum map and then not provide enough copies for each student. It is criminal, and it should be illegal if it's not already.
So like, I can tell you, California Ed Code in the state of California. Yes, I hear myself. Yes, I hear it. I promise. I do. Per California Ed Code, you must have a textbook or a text material for every student. For every student. That includes if the textbook is on a computer, you must have computer access for every single student. And so this now begets the next question or the next issue, which is that Amanda told me, well, novels aren't considered textbooks. Yes, they are if they are adopted and a part of a mandated curriculum. Then that inherently becomes a textbook. You must have a copy of a textbook for every child. Otherwise, you're in violation of FAPE. That's not a free and public education. That's it.
That's it. Which is there, like, again, we are going to move up. We're going to move on.
We're going to move beyond the outrage. We promise. But
we want to give you, though, like, you are not crazy. You are not.
Right.
This is absolutely wrong. And it's worth fighting this battle. If we're talking about picking battles, this one is one that if I was still in the situation, it would be top of my list. Like, I would be putting up a stink constantly about this issue. With every mandate that comes down from above, I would say, I can't do this without X, Y, and Z. You're spending this amount of money on this initiative. I want money for my books. Like, I would be loud, obnoxious, and fighting. Now, not everyone is in that situation.
I was just going to say, kind of, yeah, not everybody has that situation.
I don't expect you to, but if you need the go ahead,
yes,
to feel empowered.
If you needed permission.
If you needed permission, there it is. It's unacceptable. And we love you. And we're really sorry, because we really do think that there's a lot of, this is going to require some very creative problem solving.
And as a parent, I'm livid.
Oh, yes.
I'm actually more livid as a parent than I am as a teacher. And I think it's because the teacher side of me has become conditioned to being a teacher and being abused in different ways. But the parent side of me is, she's fiercer. She's got some rage. She's got some rage to work through.
As she should. As she should.
And some indignance.
As she should. Okay, let's creative problem solve this issue. Let's
do it.
Meet this teacher where she is and see what we can do.
Cleansing breath, cue the music.
You're listening to Brave New Teaching, and we are so much more than a podcast.
We give teachers the inspiration, support, and tools to challenge the status quo.
I'm Amanda, and I'm a former English teacher from Illinois.
And I'm Marie, and I'm a teacher from Southern California.
Join us at bravenewteaching.com to find out more about our courses, festivals, and get every episode's show notes.
We're so glad you're here. Enjoy the show. Okay. I want to jump in.
I'm still breathing, Marie. No, I'm not ready.
You are. I know you're still breathing, which is why I will jump in. Actually, I kind of want to hear your solution first.
So I guess for some context too, right? So for some context of what we've talked about with best practices in teaching whole class novels is that Marie and I have talked at length about the importance of sending reading home. Not the importance of arbitrary homework, but the importance of large chunks of reading and students learning how to read on their own, at their own pace, in their own comfortable environments, and the importance of dedicating our class time. This is where really the problem is dedicating our class time to instruction.
Yes.
And if we are going to do read alouds, that they have this very clear purpose and mission for what they are going to accomplish, right? We're doing close reading, or we're introducing a scene or some characters, and then we're really taking our class time to do that harder, right, more analytical, interpretive, synthesis type of thinking, because that's what kids really need help with and instruction on, is how to do that really difficult thinking. So we want kids to read at home. We want them to read on their own so that we can dedicate the class time we need to on those things. So that's where we're coming from with this frustration, because I hear a lot of teachers who have plenty of books and are still reading aloud page by page, entire novels to their classes, which I just talked to Betsy on the Spark Creativity podcast about this practice. And it's got some flaws, but the problem we have here is a class time problem. That's what we're facing.
Yes, because there is a place and time for even the audiobook version of something where kids are reading along with it. I'm going to talk to you all about the way that I teach The Great Gatsby in a moment, because that is my solution that I have.
I think we have a similar solution, because what I was going to say is I would do as much as I possibly can to imitate that same structure. So I would not do read aloud together. you can do scenes, right? Like if we're thinking about Gatsby, we always do chapter one together because I can speed through and not comment on things that don't matter and keep moving and moving. And we can laugh about Nick and how ridiculous he is and talk about Polo, whatever. And I can model that thinking and get kids through chapter one, which is so effing boring. But I think that the goal for me would be, okay, I need to give students access to a multiple ways of reading. So whether that's listening to the audiobook on YouTube or it's reading, like reading their one book for the class set, I would make that carved out time independent. I would ask kids to do that on their own. And then I would still schedule days for close reading and all these other lessons. I think it's just going to make the unit longer because that outside time now becomes in-class time. But I really wouldn't change much other than, unfortunately, this particular unit has to be longer.
Yes.
And then I think, I don't want to run into what you're going to say, Marie. I think that the other kind of marriage of that version is if you can choose your books, giving kids multiple ways of accessing it as you go, right? So you might do a read aloud for chapter one, you might do independent reading for chapter two, and you might watch chapter three. Like Gatsby's a perfect example because the movie is so close to the text, which is, again, like that's exactly how we teach plays. We have this kind of hybrid experience. That's going to be that engagement part of this teacher's question, is you've got to keep things moving. I think the last thing I'd say is with the independent reading stuff, I would definitely harness the power of reading sprints, especially if your kids are struggling readers. I think it really helps them to have a focused amount of time. There's a start and a finish, a break, and then they start it again. It's like, we're going to do a 10-minute reading sprint. Let's see how far you can get. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to go. And then you just try to keep moving them. And you just got to also put up some firm dates that if it's not all read by a certain date, here are the spark notes, we're moving on.
Yeah.
Because that also becomes a problem when kids are reading at a different pace.
Like, figure it out. We got to keep going.
I just brain dumped a ton of things. But
you did. Well, and I'm going to add on to pretty much all of it. So basically, to add on to what Amanda was just saying about you have to have some firm dates, is not everybody's going to read at the same pace. Amanda and I read at very different paces, depending on what it is that we are reading, right? Like, and that's to career educators in the English language arts area. So inherently, your kids are going to read at very different paces, and they're going to need to learn to be compatible, to make themselves compatible with the world around them, right? So I would say, yes, if possible, it's going to extend the amount of time that any given unit takes place. What can happen, though, is if you have certain days of the week, like we always talk about templating your weeks, right? So if you've got Mondays and Wednesdays are reading days, and you've got something that's like a while reading activity that students are doing and tracking or something, you know, an evidence tracker or something that's happening while they are reading, we also have to then start to be okay with maybe a student's not going to finish the whole entire book.
Yep.
Guess what? Most of them aren't finishing the book anyways. And so maybe it's this hybrid experience for a book like The Great Gatsby or some of our other works that have like major film releases, or, you know, East of Eden has like the mini series, you know, like maybe it's that hybrid experience. But if you are looking at something that does not have a film adaptation or something like that, then I think that it becomes your project opportunity as the teacher to be able to chop up whatever that text is. And let's say it's the first three chapters that you're going to be looking at in any given week. Maybe kids actually get to read the first three chapters if they are that fast of a reader on those two reading days. Or maybe they don't get to read the first three chapters, but whatever the activities are, they're still able to access. Let me actually be clear on this. It's going to force your hand into decentering the novel.
Mm-hmm.
And the novel is just part. It's like kind of the anchor, it's the centerpiece, but it is a small, that centerpiece gets smaller when it comes to its weight and its importance as to what students are learning. You put way more of your back behind the essential question, the supplemental texts, the other things that students can actually take home, like articles, like YouTube videos, like TED Talks, like podcast episodes, and things that they can consume and experience on their own. And then that kind of flips but it cannot be every day in class because, again, that's going to get very boring and you will lose them completely after 3 days. Maybe half of class of 2 days a week is spent on reading, and students are either going to get through it or they're not, but they can still access it. Is what I'm saying making sense? Like, should I walk through what I'm saying in a week or okay?
No, I'm just trying so hard to stay positive because I've got this.
Yes. I know. I'm angry on the behalf of others.
It is. It's insidious because we also know like what comes behind this, right? And like how much this ties into privilege.
We see the seedy underbelly. Exactly. However, I think that it could be a silver lining if your hand is forced to really decenter the novel.
So let's take that a next step further, because I think this continues on that thought, and this is positive. So I think we can look at this too with a wins column and a loss column.
Right.
Right. For me, a loss is excerpting a novel. And like, that's what we're proposing to you as a Band-Aid solution right now, because the loss began long before it came to you. So that's fine. But the win column, right? Like if you're going to be kind of, your hand is forced into excerpting and doing what you got to do here, what I think the opportunity also becomes is those other non whole class novel units. So I think that if your school has a lot of books, but just not enough for everyone, I think this is a great opportunity to start reimagining your year and finding places where choice reading and independent reading, and we just talked about some cool like poetry and art, rhetorical analysis, like short pieces and or choice reading can really start to take over in terms of like the weight of your year. And although your whole class novel unit is subpar compared to what you'd love it to be, those other units can be absolutely incredible, powerful. And, you know, I think that your heart breaks when you think that students are losing the opportunity to see a novel from start to finish. But if they're reading choice novels and they have access to a novel within a lit circle or an independent reading situation, you're not really losing that. I mean, you're losing it a little bit in that one unit, but you're recovering it in others. So maybe keep your eyes to the other units. Don't dwell on on those units where your hands are tied so much, and celebrate the ones where maybe you have a little bit more freedom and make those really stand out. Here at Brave New Teaching, you hear Marie and I talk a lot about the power of choice. And we believe so deeply in finding opportunities to provide students choice. And this is something that it's an idea that I actually struggled with for a long time. And I've been honest about that on the podcast many, many times. Choice on the surface to me sometimes looked like a free-for-all, a lack of control, something that a very Enneagram type 3 personality person would not really want to hand over to other people, much less teenagers. And so learning how to teach and also give choice, right? How to guide novice learners through things that are challenging, but also afford them opportunities to be in control of that. Those were very conflicting ideas for me. And so it was kind of a slow process as I kind of got further and further along into bigger and bigger choices I felt good about giving my students. But if you're kind of like me and you're, yes, I do want this world of providing more choice and for students being a bigger part of the day-to-day decisions that are happening in terms of the curriculum and the way the class runs, but I'm not ready to go all in, I really think that a great place to start would be using digital choice boards. Digital choice boards, whether you're going to make them yourself or you're going to check out the ones that I have on my TBT store, either way, this is going to be up to you. But digital choice boards provide a backbone of choice to your classroom. Choice doesn't mean a free-for-all, right? Choice and a choice board, or whether you're doing choice reading, it doesn't mean kids can do whatever they want. It means that they can select from a list of choices that are curated by you. And so in a digital choice board situation, let's say you're coming up on a Heritage Month. Let's say it's Black History Month coming up. And not only do you want to make sure that there is a permanent and important place for Black history and Black culture appreciation in your classroom, but you also want to make sure that students are able to explore a wide variety of topics within that realm. A choice board allows you to do this. So in a digital choice board situation, let's say that you had My Black History one, what you would do is a couple of things. First, you need to decide how you want to use it. So it can be used for bell work. It can be used for early finishers. It can be used as a tic-tac-toe board over the course of the month. I've used it in so many different ways, but it's really, really powerful to have on hand because let's say you finish a lesson early, or let's say a student was absent for a day that it just doesn't make sense for you to have them redo that day. You'd have to do more teaching. Students could, instead of redoing the lesson that they missed, choose something from the choice board and read that and then complete whatever the written activity is that goes with it. For bell work, students can choose from the choice board to read, watch, or listen to whatever they want on the board, and then they complete the written component. So the way that I structure it is I have a Google form, and the Google form doesn't change. It's the exact same form that kids fill out each time they visit the choice board. They'll fill out their own names. They'll say which category they selected. They'll list the title and author of the article or book talk or whatever it is that they looked at. And then they have a writing prompt at the end that is something along the lines of, it's a reflection, right? Like, what did you learn? What are your takeaways? And there might even be like an essential question component depending on the unit and depending on the choice board. And so these are really designed to help you not only, right, either expose students to more culture. Maybe they're designed to expose students to more of a genre, right? I've done genre-based choice boards that kind of arc throughout a unit rather than a month. They're going to give more text to your unit. Especially if you're teaching with inquiry, you're teaching with synthesis, that just gives students more to consider as they're exploring this essential question, as they're arriving at their summative at the end of the unit. They're going to have more text at their disposal because here and there they have looked at, listened to, read, and been part of this choice board experience. It is so powerful. I am going to share in the show notes a few examples of choice boards that I really like. I have a YouTube video that talks about how to design one for poetry. I have a few products in my store, especially for Cultural Heritage Months and for essential questions. I have all choice boards for all of that. So come over, take a look, look at the preview, watch the YouTube video, and see if something in this realm would help you kind of bridge that gap between you control everything and students control everything. This is where choice starts to learn, to breathe, and be part of the fabric of your classroom. Back to the show.
Okay, I think I have one more kind of thought when it comes back to the idea of, let's say, you know, you're a teacher and you're newer, right? First, second year teaching, and you've been told you must do this entire book. You only have 30 copies and they must stay in your classroom. First of all, if you only have 30 students, cool. Good for you. I have 42.
That's a whole nother problem.
That's a whole nother conversation. So what are some ways that you can get creative with your curriculum in order to accommodate that? The way that I can see this working is to layer two units on top of each other. And students can do this and you can do this. It's just going to take some real, like, sit down, think it through, let it marinate for a day, get back to it, think it through, let it marinate, you know, for over the weekend or whatever. But the way that I can see this working, I'm going to go back to Gatsby simply because that's what's in the front of my mind. Let's say that Gatsby is going to be parallel to a unit that is on rhetorical analysis. What I would be looking for in creating these parallel units, we're looking at two different questions. Absolutely. I might have templated days like unit one and unit two, and they're going to be on the calendar doubly as long, mm-hmm. right? Like they, right, where I might have them back to back and they would become a 9-week quarter. The entire quarter is going to be these two things that we're looking at.
Yeah.
And I'm flip-flopping maybe every week, every other week, or it is a lot. When I'm thinking about it, it sounds like a lot to manage. I'm just trying to be creative because for somebody who was told you must do this, how are you going to say no? Or how are you going to, like, whether right now in year 17, I can sit down and talk to a group of parents or, you know, have that one conference about why are you watching a movie with my student? And I can tell you all of the things. And I can tell you all of the ways that my years of experience and professional just like life have led to this point. And I know what I'm talking about. When I was 24 and a second year teacher, yeah, I didn't have that wherewithal. So that is all to say that I think it sounds like a lot, but I feel like if I had more time, like I'm legitimately just coming up with this as we're recording. Like if I had more time to really think it through, I could see layering two units together. And no one has more importance than the other. Just one will get more attention than the other on any given day.
I think that's kind of like, but even like what you do with your monsters and heroes, villains and heroes unit, like one group is doing heroes first, the other group is doing villains first, and then they swap. Like it doesn't really matter which you do first. It matters that at the end you've done both.
Yeah.
So
you, and then just, there's a question at the end. Yeah, no, it's true.
So the text, you know, whatever the text is for monsters, everyone has it for as long as they need because no one else is reading it. The other class is doing this. And then half the class,
I've got two class periods and half the class is looking at Frankenstein and the other half of the class is looking at the Odyssey.
Done.
Right. And then switch.
And then you switch. It's still more work for you, but.
Well, but on certain days, it's just more independent work for students. And then I would say on other days, we're all doing the supplements all at the same time together.
Sure.
Those are the things that are going to anchor us.
Yes.
So it could. Okay, let's go with this, shall we?
It's exhausting if those are both brand new texts for you. That's where it's hard. But I mean.
Oh, 100,000,000%. This is I'm tired and we're not doing this.
Yes.
But you could go like Monday is going to be an assessment day like Amanda likes to do, right? You've got a Sesame Street quiz. That's where like if you have not yet taken down with the reading quiz and you're listening to this going, oh, this sounds kind of like my school, take down with the reading quiz so that our free masterclass on formative assessments so that you can get some tricks for making this less nausea inducing. But you have like an assessment and some sort of like a reading activity for whatever the text is that they're reading. And the difference between the texts is that each is looking at a different half of an essential question. So maybe it's one essential question that those two texts can go toward. What am I trying to say?
You know, I'm in there.
Focus towards or whatever, contribute towards or something like that. You're exploring the question through them, but they're just looking at a different part of the question.
Yes. It's doable.
It's doable, but it's awful. I hate my own idea.
I don't.
On standard.
it's again, I hope we've given a couple of ideas for depending on where you are in your career, depending on where you are in your personal life, what you can handle. Unfortunately, you know, this just might be a reason to look for a new school to work at. This might be a reason
we don't want to be fatalist, but at the same time, if somebody is giving you that kind of an impossibility, it just might be something to think about while you are living and triaging your own situation in the moment. Think about it. It's not that bad everywhere. We all have our own issues, right? So it's not perfect anywhere, but it's not that bad everywhere.
And if you're a later career teacher that has the energy, I mean, maybe this is your hill to die on. And this is what you take up with your union. Maybe you're not in a union state. And you know, I mean, this is hard. This is hard. We love you. And we are here to be creative and support you as much as we can. So if this did not do the trick, feel free to send us an email. Feel free to send us a DM.
We're trying.
we are definitely trying. And I think we are also better with more specifics too. You know, this is something that I would coach on if that was something that was, you know, where we were headed, but it's not easy.
Like my initial understanding of this is that, and Amanda had explained it to me before we started recording. I was like, are you telling me that if I'm a junior teacher in my classroom and next door is a junior teacher in that classroom and then another one down the hall, we all have 30 books to share? And she was like, no, I think it's like one classroom set. And I was like, oh, okay. Like I went straight to the like, that's it, where it's over. The written word is dead.
I guess the last, I could give another suggestion. And I think I've talked about this on our other episodes about reading is check out Actively Learn.
Yes, you have talked about that. Yes.
Their licenses are relatively inexpensive, especially for books that are in the public domain. A lot of this conversation also depends on what your books are.
Right. If it's in the public, I mean, if you're doing Shakespeare, done. MyShakespeare.com.
Done.
There you go.
Other public domain books, you know, Gatsby, I know last time I checked on actively, it was 50 cents a license. So that's affordable, you know, that should be affordable. It's more affordable than the paperbacks. I know that for a fact. So, you know, do your research. Actively is a good place to go, but I'm not going to say I've ever illegally broken the binding of a book, scanned it in as a PDF and given it to my children. I've never done that. But there are definitely other ways to do it.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us today. We hope you have a wonderful week at school. We are both a little too worked up over this one, and we're going to need to go take a walk and calm down. But send us your questions. We will have more lesson plan rescues coming at you very, very soon.
Yes.
And other things that I'm a little too flustered by this lesson plan rescue to remember what I'm supposed to say at the end of an episode. So.
Wait, okay, well, here, let's see. What the people were also talking about Socratic seminar lesson plan rescue stuff.
Okay.
Elaborating on evidence supporting their claim. So commentary. Bro, writing.
Yeah, we're going to need to get into that one soon because yes. Your girl is struggling as well.
Okay.
You know what I'm struggling with? I'm struggling with differentiating some of my scaffolding. Like, that's part of my issue, actually. I'm not struggling with it. I'm just exhausted and done. So well, here's some really good news. Left the building. Okay.
Listen, next month is Teacher Appreciation Month. The whole month.
Yes, we've decided it's not a day. It's not a week. It's a month.
It's a month. So we are going to do everything we can to continue and find new ways to appreciate you. So please, please stay tuned and send this episode to a friend. Send this podcast to someone else who would be feeling appreciated by hanging out with us on the podcast on Thursdays.
Absolutely. Have a wonderful week at school. Thank you for joining us. And we will see you next time.
Bye. Thanks again for listening to Brave New Teaching.
We'd love to keep the conversation going over on Instagram.
And while you're there, check out the links in our bio for the most up-to-date events going on in the Brave New Teaching community.
Thanks for being here and have a great week at school.